From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
An individual which I think any individual who's going to lead any team would be proud to have with you.
Viv Richards leads the field as the world's cricketing greats pay tribute to Malcolm Marshall. I'm Debbie Ransom and this is BBC Caribbean Report. The tributes have poured in all day for the man often hailed as one of Test cricket's greatest pace bowlers, Malcolm Marshall, who died last evening in his native Barbados. Marshall, who was 41, died from cancer of the colon. Today, the England team wore black armbands on their South African tour, and a minute's silence was observed in the Australia-Pakistan Test match. Later in the programme, we'll hear some of the tributes and memories from his former colleagues and the wider cricketing world. But first, Orrin Gordon looks back on the man many called the intelligent bowler.
So here he comes, on the way now to Downton, who drives. He is caught behind. That's the end of the England innings. Marshall's seventh wicket in the innings. England all out 159. The West Indies need 128 to win the match and to take a 3-0 lead in the series. So the first time that Malcolm Marshall has taken seven wickets in the series, and what a performance by the one-arm bandit, as he was being referred to in the press.
Malcolm Marshall giving one of his best ever performances on a cricket field at Headingley in 1984. Coming out to bat with a broken left hand, helping Larry Gomes to a century as a one-handed batsman, then returning to destroy England with the ball with his one good hand, is the stuff of cricketing legend. Marshall was diagnosed with colon cancer in May during the World Cup and gave up the job of coach to undergo chemotherapy in Birmingham. The team doctor, Rudy Webster, saw him through this and spoke to BBC Caribbean Report at the time.
What I would like to see is the people throughout the Caribbean rally around him and give him the love and support that he deserves to have as a champion that has thrilled so many people around the world.
I have to ask you this, Dr. Webster. How do the doctors rate his chances of survival?
Well, I think only the good Lord upstairs knows how long anyone is going to live.
Things did look hopeful for a while, but his condition grew worse a few days ago, and he went into hospital in Barbados where he died. What's clear is that this is big news, not just in the Caribbean, but everywhere in the cricketing world. In England, the former captains David Gower and Ian Botham were warm in their tributes. Pakistan's captain Wasim Akram called him the cleverest bowler cricket's ever seen. South African all-rounder Sean Pollock called his former coach in tears at the news. Marshall was his mentor at Natal Province, now KwaZulu-Natal, and also guided Lance Klusner, the revelation of last summer's World Cup. A little-known fact about Malcolm Marshall is that he's second only to Gary Sobers as an all-rounder. They're the only ones to have taken more than 100 wickets and scored more than 1,000 runs. He held the record for the most wickets by a West Indian bowler, 376, until Courtney Walsh overtook him. Marshall was short for a fast bowler, but his quick-arm action allowed him to skid the ball onto the batsman. His action wasn't out of the textbook either, but that didn't stop him from being a big swinger of the ball.
Orrin Gordon. Well, we went to two cricketing greats and a veteran commentator to share memories of Malcolm Marshall's contribution to West Indies cricket. I spoke earlier today to Marshall's former captain, Viv Richards, in Bombay, India, former cricket administrator and player Clyde Walcott in Bridgetown, and veteran commentator Tony Cozier. I began by asking Sir Viv Richards about the presence Malcolm Marshall brought to West Indies cricket.
I've always said in the past that if ever I was going to go into battle and I was going to call maybe one or two or three individuals, first of all, his name would come up trumps, because his whole attitude towards the game, his professionalism, and also as well too, he's just a wonderful guy with just wonderful spirit. And I think when you have individuals like this with such enormous talent and a beautiful personality as well, I think that goes a long way, and I can honestly say that I did benefit a lot from his presence in the team at that time.
Let me bring in Sir Clyde Walcott in Bridgetown. Sir Clyde, you've had the experience of a couple of generations of West Indies cricket. Where does Malcolm Marshall stand in all of that?
Well, I think he was a great man, Malcolm. I recall I managed Malcolm on two occasions. One was the 1979 World Cup, when he came into the side, and he couldn't really get in the side because we had a pretty good batch of quick bowlers. But he was pleasant, and he was still chatting cricket. He always wanted to talk cricket, and he was a great contributor at team meetings. And then, of course, he blossomed, and blossomed into one of the best we've had in the Caribbean as a quick bowler. And I think it's a great loss to West Indies cricket, especially at this point in time when we need everyone who is knowledgeable and who is willing to impart their knowledge in developing the young players in the region.
Well, let's go to Tony Cozier, who is in Discovery Bay in Jamaica. Tony, as a commentator, standing back and watching the performance of the West Indies team, where do you rate Malcolm Marshall?
Well, of course, his statistics speak for themselves, where he has 376 test wickets at an average of under 21, just over 20 apiece, and that's quite remarkable. A statistic for someone who played as many as 81 test matches. He just was an outstanding bowler. He read the weakness of batsmen so quickly, and that I think is what has made him such a good coach and someone who all the fast bowlers of the modern generation come to seek out. As you know, modern cricketers, present-day cricketers of any generation really, tend to look skeptically on the knowledge of the older players and find it difficult to go and approach them. Malcolm Marshall, whether in South Africa or in England, Australia, wherever, would be approached. We heard Michael Holding this morning talking about Chris Cairns, the New Zealand fast bowler, going to him for advice even when he was ill in England this summer. Dominic Cork in England, many of the West Indians, and of course in South Africa, people like Lance Klusener and Sean Pollock have credited Malcolm Marshall with their advance. His great enthusiasm for the game. I don't think I've seen anyone as enthusiastic about cricket. And when you're talking about West Indies cricket and West Indians, that's saying a lot.
Tony, do you think that Malcolm Marshall had the chance to make the contribution as a coach? Sir Clyde made the point about being able to impart that experience. He didn't really get the time to do that, did he?
Well, we can equate his loss with the loss at a very similar age of Sir Frank Worrell back in 1967, where Sir Frank, like Marshall, had contributed so much to West Indies cricket, was contributing at the time of his death, and had so much more to contribute when he died.
Now, let's go back to India and Viv Richards. Viv, what's your favourite memory of Malcolm Marshall? How will you remember him?
I just took over, I think, when we were at Old Trafford, when we got beaten by Australia, and we were on our way down to Birmingham, and we stopped in to see him as a team. And just the way he looked after the operation, he looked to me at that stage that he could still do maybe 30 or more into the wind. And he was in such beautiful spirit. And I would like to remember him that way. That's the way I can remember when he was playing. That's the way he was, what he was all about. He was saying little things like, hey, Smokey this and Smokey that. And that's the way he talked. And sometimes a little hard to understand at times because of his raw Bajan accent. I always loved that in him. You know, he never took that away from him. He was Bajan through and through everywhere he went. You know, and it's just that spirit which I think I would like to remember, the positive stuff. You know, because he was just a wonderful character.
Well, you mentioned Bajan through and through. Let's go back to Bridgetown and finish. Clyde Walcott, your favourite memories. How will you remember him?
I recall when I was chairman of selectors, and I was about to call it a day. I thought I'd had enough at the time. And Malcolm came to me and said, well, look, I don't agree with you. We would like you to continue because I feel that you're looking to select the best side, and there's no insularity, you know, as we can see. And we would like you to continue. Now, it is not usual for a player to speak that highly of a selector. And I did decide because of the players asking me to do this. And I will never forget Malcolm on that.
And Tony Cozier, your last chance to bowl one for Marshall. Your favourite memory of him?
There's one memory which I think Malcolm himself would like me to state and others. The memory I have, in addition to everything else, which is so obvious, is his flick through mid-wicket He really valued his batting very highly, and he was a much better batsman than his records show. And the one disappointment he had was that he never scored a test century. His highest score was 92. And to me, the flick and through mid-wicket and mid-on, which he loved and which he played with such elegance, was a memory perhaps that not many people would put forward, but certainly I would like to.
Tony Kozier, and before him Sir Clyde Walcott in Bridgetown and Sir Viv Richards in Bombay. And we'll hear from other cricketing giants later on in the programme. Just a reminder that you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. In other news, Cuba and Holland have signed a new investment promotion agreement. Official radio reports said that the deal should boost trade between Havana and The Hague, which currently stands at $200 million a year. The agreement was signed during a visit to Cuba by the Dutch economy minister, the first trip to Havana by a Dutch government official in 20 years. In Jamaica, today marks day 12 of a commission of inquiry into the circumstances surrounding the escape of 23 prisoners from one of the island's maximum security jails. As Karen Weir reports from Kingston, this week's sit-ins reveal some shocking revelations from the prison inmates.
Of the 34 testimonies given so far at the commission of inquiry into how 22 maximum security prisoners escaped from Kingston's Tower Street Penitentiary last month, this week's accounts of events by its inmates left the prison's correctional officers with egg on their faces. This includes allegations of officers taking prisoners working outside the prison to a local bar for drink, as well as wardens being inebriated whilst on duty. But the most devastating blow to the penitentiary's claims of being a maximum security compound came on Tuesday when a recaptured prisoner gave his crushing revelation of how an officer had told him it was his freedom day and had released him through the prison's main gate. He explained that this had happened the day after the 22 prisoners had fled en masse from the prison. The week's inquest has consisted mainly of interviews by recaptured inmates who confirmed that their three-minute escape had been made over a wall using a rope. This was achieved by building two fires in the prison yard, a regular prisoner activity, and using it literally as a smokescreen to their unlawful actions, as bellowing smoke obscured the prison warden's view of the penitentiary's grounds. Having said this, it has also come to light that the two guards that were in sentry boxes located on the prison's perimeter walls at the time of the escape were in any case sitting down, a position which blocked their line of sight into the prison's grounds. When one officer was questioned yesterday as to why he had sat for a considerable length of time, after pausing for more than a minute, he replied he was resting his feet.
That report by Karen Weir in Kingston. And finally, we end on those international tributes to Malcolm Marshall. The world's cricketing greats all paid their respects today, from Ian Botham and David Gower to Wasim Akram, Imran Khan, Colin Croft and Michael Holding.
Malcolm was talented, awesomely talented as a fast bowler, but he thought about it too. He was intelligent, he could bowl quick, he could make the ball move at pace. And he was a battler, he was a fighter.
He looked so tiny, nobody could believe that he could generate such pace. Off the field, he was such a gentleman, such a good friend. I think the entire world is going to mourn this.
But really, from 81 onwards, he was a major force in their fast bowling attack. And of course, in the 80s, it was the strongest fast bowling attack I think we've probably ever seen. If he wanted to, he could bowl as quickly as anyone in the world in that period.
As a bowler, he was, I think, the most cleverest bowler in Test history has ever produced. And he was a fearsome competitor. Doesn't matter either he's playing in Pakistan, India, or even in West Indies or Australia. He used to get wickets all over the place.
I found him a great competitor on the field. He gave it all. He was a real fighter. I always enjoyed competing with him, and if you did well against him, you knew you really had done well. And off the field, he was a friend. We had a lot of laughs. He was a very decent man, an honourable man.
Michael Marshall was one of the great West Indian fast bowlers, one of the greatest we have ever produced. He worked hard, he trained hard, and, I don't just think of Malcolm as a fast bowler and as a man who got so many wickets. And he's more than just a statistic to me.
Michael Holden ending that round of international tributes to Barbadian pace bowler Malcolm Marshall, who died last night at the age of 41. And that's it for this Friday edition of BBC Caribbean Report. More news on Monday morning at 11.05, 11.15 and 12.10 GMT. I'm Debbie Ransom, saying goodbye from London.